News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Good morning from Dan and Sean on Mobile Mornings on FM Talk 106.5, 807. Dalton away. Sean is in. Thank you, buddy. I know you're not feeling best because of the pollen.
Because somehow, like, the pollen load of, 18,000 oak trees just entered.
It's all in your left nostril.
Yes. It's weird as you get, I didn't have, you probably weren't allowed in my house. You weren't allowed to have allergies in my house anyways growing up. They were not allowed.
Yeah.
But I never had big allergy issues. But it seems like year after year, the pollen thing gets me more and more.
I don't know that I have.
Now maybe I'll grow out of it one day. I don't know.
Well, I remember I was more susceptible to it years ago. I was living when I was in Columbus, Georgia, and we were considering the move down here.
Mm-hmm.
And I had pollen pretty bad. I was coming down here for the weekend to kind of scope things out mm-hmm. a little bit. And I remember I just had a really bad case of what you have right now.
Right.
And Columbus is kind of in a valley. You know, it asks for it. It asks for heat and it asks for pollen. It's like, bring it on.
Yeah.
Because it's a little bit in a river valley. And and so you don't get the break with any kind of a breeze from June to August, right, at least. And also you get that pretty intense pollen. I love it's a beautiful area in the backwaters up the Chattahoochee. Mm-hmm. Have you been there?
I have. I just took the kids 2 years ago to do the rafting there too.
Oh, in the city?
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we loved it. Yeah. So I mean it's too short. The runs are too short.
Yeah.
But I mean it's getting to do some real rafting here, you know.
Explain that, because people don't know that. So and I wasn't there when they did it, but I thought it was pretty ingenious. So they've got the Chattahoochee right there between them and Phoenix City, and they went ahead and created an attraction.
They improved. They went in, I think, added a little bit to Mother Nature there with the boulders and all that. But it's based on the generation schedule
mm-hmm.
for the dam, mm-hmm. how much water they're letting out, so you can. They could take they have slower flows at some point, which are a little more sedate. And then as they pick up with the power, the rapids increase in strength. And that's when it's real fun to be in the rafts going down. Yeah, we had a good time.
How long were you in the water for a run? 10 minutes, maybe?
Yeah, okay. The total thing was probably half an hour. But you're not constantly in a rapid. You're like in a rapid. Then you're in a rapid. Yeah. It's a fun thing to do. And there's the Whitewater Park in Montgomery where they had the fake whitewater. You know, well, I mean, it's still white water, but it's man-made, of course, there as well. There's some of those things to do if you don't have time to drive up to the Smokies. I like to whitewater raft. So those are two of the closer places to go get after it.
Interesting place in Columbus. I think you'll like this and appreciate this. In Columbus, Georgia, there was the mills were right on the river, right mm-hmm. there, like the old bridge between mm-hmm. Columbus and Phoenix City. Might have been Swift Textile Mill, something like that. There was one or two or three along that. And in the north side of town, which would have been considered the north side of town, I think, along the river, years ago was a place called Bibb City. And it was so many of those workers came from Appalachia mm-hmm. to find work,
mm-hmm.
and they lived right there. So it was a housing community.
Yeah, like a factory town.
A factory town.
Yeah.
And what was very interesting about it was it was just interesting. The people there, it was kind of dying out.
Mm-hmm.
And then now you had people looking at this prime real estate like, hey, I guess what we can do in Bibb City.
Time to gentrify.
Yeah, exactly. But there were still remnants of the people that lived pretty tough mm-hmm. lives in the mills. You know,
right.
The people that are 60 and look 80,
mm-hmm.
and I'm not trying to be funny here, but mm-hmm. that's the life that they lived, and it was just an interesting little corner of town where those people were still
Bibb City.
I think it was Bibb City.
Interesting. I was completely ignorant to that.
Yeah, yeah. I don't get back there much, but not a bad city. I wouldn't say that you got to circle it, but the rafting alone
rafting
is
thing
pretty cool.
If you want to go rafting, I mean, the Montgomery Whitewater Park, but you can go over right there across the bridge and do some rafting.
And also, another thing they did downtown was they moved the Columbus State's art school, theater department, to downtown Columbus, and so it's kind of active and vibrant with students mm-hmm. all the time down there. They've got a big theater as well. So they did some good stuff in that town.
Yeah, sorry to derail you. I know you want to talk about the Bears and all
oh,
that.
Oh, yeah. But that's a – I have all very fond memories of the people.
And the pollen.
And the pollen. I don't have fond memories. And I'll leave it alone. But also in Columbus, Georgia, one thing that I thought was pretty interesting and I appreciated a lot was some of the people that were the most wealthy were the people that were most civic-minded. So they gave back to, and they did it quietly too. They didn't take a bow or anything like that. They just did good stuff for the city. That river walk that you
mm-hmm. yeah we did that
that
yeah.
that was around the time that I was maybe a couple of years before I left. They did all that. Another city that probably is on your list is Savannah. On the other side, now it's 4 hours away from Columbus, so I'm not telling you it's an easy, but that is a cool town.
Yeah, they don't have any whitewater.
Well, they don't have whitewater. They got plenty of bars.
Yes.
And history as well. A lot to get to this hour with Sean and Dan. Yesterday, I thought it was kind of sweet, Dalton talking about his granddaddy. I don't know if you heard that.
I did, absolutely. And walked in here and said, great, great stuff.
Really, really, really wonderful. That's where he is. Family gathers to memorialize his granddaddy. So we want to get to the vet bill passing. I mean, we can't talk about something for 9 months and then suddenly drop it like a hot potato and like, oh, that it's done, because there's going to be ramifications, I suppose, here coming up with the Ivy's idea for the bill. It's now officially law. Also, a couple of days ago, we didn't have a chance to get to this yesterday, some of the Democratic mayors were, you always say grilled by the Oversight Committee, but there was a lot of grilling going on, because I think the mayor of Chicago, the mayor of Denver, the mayor of Boston, the mayor of New York City, all were sitting in front of this Oversight Committee and being asked about what's going on in their cities right now. So this is kind of the beginning of it all. I don't know the congresswoman's name, but she's just saying, what kind of money have you spent on illegals in the past several years? And check out the answers. This is a little bit edited, but from Chicago to Chicago to Denver to New York and Boston.
In the last 4 years, how much has Chicago spent on care for illegal aliens?
So since 2022, since the governor of Texas began shipping.
Just tell me a number. I don't need a speech. Just tell me a number.
So since 2022, since the governor of Texas was shipping individuals to cities across this country, the city's budget, roughly 1% of the city's budget over the course of 4 years.
Mayor Johnston, the same question, and I don't need a speech, just a number.
Thank you, Congresswoman. It's $79 million over the last 2.5 years.
Wow.
Mayor Adams, same question. How much has New York spent to care for illegal aliens?
Approximately $6.9 billion went out of all taxpayers' funds.
Mayor Wu, same question. How much has Boston spent to care for illegal aliens in the last 4 years?
We do not ask about immigration status and giving city services and providing that access, so we do not have a number.
Is that ridiculous?
Yeah, and back to the New York number. Wow.
$6.9 billion.
Billion.
The mayor of Chicago, billion. Johnson, really was not forthcoming. 1% of our, which sounds incorrect, first of all, but he didn't have the number. Can you imagine going the test? You kind of know what they're going to ask you, and you show up to the meeting, and you don't have the answers.
You're trying to obfuscate, Dan. I mean, that's, you're trying to hide the. It's not omission; it's commission. Mm. You don't dare say.
So he said 1%.
Where the taxpayer dollars go? Oh, yeah.
So he didn't want to give the answer. The guy from Denver, who is still fighting ICE tooth and nail. See, I think the Denver guy was like, to home and bring it on. Mm-hmm. We're not going to help you guys at all.
So you square up that fight. Holman versus Mayor of Denver. I'm going to take Holman. I don't know where the money in Vegas is, but I'll take Holman on that one.
Amen. Adam, $6.9 million. And then Wu says, we don't recognize, we don't know. I don't know what she said, but she certainly didn't give a number.
We did not ask that question. How dare you ask the immigration status of somebody before you give them a luxury hotel room? I mean, how dare you, Dan?
So this is Johnson again from Chicago. This was part of his speech leading into it. Just the arrogance of all. Talking about, I think what he's saying here basically is ICE creates fear and fear creates crime. Check it out.
Put simply, any actions that amplify fears of deportations make Chicago more dangerous. Those fears cause witnesses and victims to avoid cooperating with police. The cooperation of all people, regardless of their immigration status, is essential to achieving the city's goals of reducing crime and pursuing justice for victims.
You notice the bravado in his opening statement, and then he's nearly like a kitty cat on the couch there when he was trying to answer questions. So when he's under like the pressure of, well, you need to tell us this, I don't want a speech. He still sneaks in. Well, when Abbott kept sending people up our way, right?
Yeah, right.
But in the bravado that he has in his opening statement, I'm going to tell you how it is. It seemed like it got reduced down a little bit after that.
It's just different math he's doing. Okay. He says, listen,
well, you help me out with it.
Okay. If you have, if ICE is here and enforcing the federal immigration law, then people that are illegal immigrants that are committing crimes or around people committing crimes aren't going to bring the information to us so we can solve the crime. But I got a better idea. If the illegal immigrant wasn't there in the first place,
right,
there would be no one for ICE to scare,
right,
to not bring the information around.
Correct, correct, and correct.
Yeah, okay, just checking that.
So it's just amazing. Those numbers were amazing, although the mayor of Chicago really didn't have a number. 1% of our budget. Well, what's your budget? Well, shut up. Go away. But that ICE would be viewed, at least in his monologue, as the agent of fear. And ICE is causing a lot of fear in our community, and fear then equals crime.
What he's trying to say, I mean, his spin here is that ICE causes fear. Therefore, witnesses to crimes, like, I guess there are so many illegal immigrants that they're witnesses to crimes, they're not going to come forward with information about the crime because they're scared of getting deported. But I would point out that if none of them were there in the first place, then you wouldn't have that issue.
You wouldn't have that added crime.
Or somebody else who was a legal citizen would see the crime and could report it. I mean, it's really, you have to go so many layers of old paint on this old Pinto, you know, to realize where the thinking gets to. You get so far removed from a baseline that you can come up with a logic and sell you this and go, listen, this is why you can't crack down immigration, illegal immigrants, because we got to have them to report crimes that are done out there.
By their brother or something
mean, that's
the logic?
That's kind of what I heard.
So, again, the mayor of Denver, he's all gloves are off. And if Holman wants to, you know, he's I just don't understand the logic in letting your city get away like this long term politically. Why are you doing this? Are you trying
for
to
votes.
Make
for
is
votes.
It for a national? Is it for a national stage that you're trying to stand out and be somebody that has got national politics on your mind?
No, but if you're, well, I mean, it might be, but it also, if you got a state where you bring these people in, eventually you can get them to be voters, and you've recruited them here, mm-hmm. then you want to keep them here.
And I'm not, I don't think I'm crazy when I say a lot of them. Look at the Hispanic and African-American gains that Trump made in the last election. I'm not mm-hmm. saying these illegal immigrants that you could quickly, swiftly turn them to Republican, but
those were citizens.
They were citizens.
Right, that's what.
No, I get it. Right. I get it. But there's a lot of people like Trump swagger, and maybe even the illegals are like, yeah, Trump's a pretty cool guy. Now I'm trying to avoid ICE at every turn, but when I get my chance to vote, I don't think it's impossible. I think I'm going to go with Trump.
Anything is possible.
Okay. Not buying it for sure. Sean says, no, Dan, that's very incorrect. It's 821. Your thoughts on the text line. We'll try to get to the text line around the corner. 251-343-0106 on Mobile Mornings. Morning from Dan and Sean. 826 on Mobile Mornings. Sean in for Dalton this morning. Much appreciated, Sean. Thank you, buddy.
Good morning, y'all.
So you probably finalized your vacation plans for spring break already.
Yeah.
But if you're on the fence about some places, Sean's got some news for you.
Yeah, this is pack your bags, y'all. It's time It's time for Sullivan's Tourism Roundup. A couple of stories that stood out to me with, like Dan said, spring break time coming up. First of all, travel warning issued for popular spring break tropical destination over crime concerns.
Okay.
That's a heck of a headline.
Yeah.
A U.S. State Department recently issued a level 2 travel advisory warning travelers to exercise increased caution in the Turks and Caicos Islands due to crime. The alert comes as the islands prepare for spring break. Most crime in the British Overseas Territory, located in the Atlantic, about 600 miles southeast of Miami and just south of Bermuda, occurs on the Turks and Caicos main island of Provincials. The local police have a limited investigatory resources, according to the State Department. Here's State Department telling Americans. When on the island, State Department recommends avoid walking alone, walking at night, answering your door, and to warn you to not physically resist during a robbery attempt.
So they're assuming that if you go there, you'll be robbed, and when you are robbed, stay passive and let it get over quicker.
Thank you, State Department. Okay. They also advised you before going to Turks and Caicos to prepare a contingency plan for emergency situations. This sounds fun.
They're pretty sure that something's going to happen to you when you go there.
This is not brought to you by Turks and Caicos Tourism.
It is not.
They said those vacationing in the Turks and Caicos should also check luggage carefully before leaving the U.S. to make sure it does not contain any bullets or firearms. I'm reading their story. I understand it's a cartridge. I understand it's a round. But
people ended up in jail at the airport there.
But had those stories. Right? Did a lot on my show about that. About people getting stopped down there. So that's one. So there's Turks and Caicos. There's more to that story, but I got to get on to the next one here as we talk about spring break. And I know your plans, might have been canceled if you're planning to hit up, like you'd rented an Airbnb in Pyongyang for spring break.
North Korea.
Yeah, bad news here. North Korea has stopped tourists from visiting just weeks after the first Western tourist entered the country for the first time in 5 years. North Korea sealed itself off at the start of COVID-19 and then started to scale back restrictions in the middle of 2023. It opened up to Russian visitors in 2024. Whoop, whoop.
And the Russians left with soldiers.
That's right. That's what they brought home from their last spring break is some troops to fight in Ukraine.
Not a trinket from the airport.
They said it was only last month that Western tourists were allowed in to North Korea. So just last month.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's off again.
They've already had their fill of them, I guess.
Says several tour companies now say their trips to the reclusive country have been canceled until further notice. Pyongyang has not given a reason for the sudden halt, but they have canceled all tours for Westerners coming. So there you go. Two of them messed up. A lot of people's spring break. There's Sullivan's travel news. So Turks and Caicos, prepare to be robbed. Don't resist.
Mm-hmm.
North Korea says you've got to cancel your spring break plans. So there you go.
You know, if you're 23, just go ahead and get hammered at Spinnaker's.
That's right. It's going to be PCB, normal. Baby.
It's 8:30 on FM Talk 106.5. Mobile Mornings. Reaction to that veterans bill on the way. Good morning from Dan Brennan. Sean Sullivan in for Dalton Orwig this morning. And you, 251-343-0106. That's our text line. And I would say you can call us too, but not right now because we have a special guest on the line, a gentleman that heard a couple of times. In fact, one time in particular on your midday show, Sean, I was so impressed with the guy and you said, oh, you ought to meet him. When you meet him, then you'll figure it all out. Haven't yet, but have spoken with him on the phone a few times. Sergeant Major Brian Battaglia, thank you for your service, and thank you for being available to us this morning. How are you?
Well, Good morning, Dan. I'm fine. Thanks for asking. Sean, good morning to you as well.
Hey, good morning, Sergeant Major. I know y'all were up there yesterday in Montgomery, as now it was in the House's hands to make a decision to benefit Alabama veterans. Is that leaning on this story enough? As I said,
yes. And
while you did get some nay votes, there were more yays in the House yesterday to do what the governor wanted.
Yeah, that's pretty much exactly what happened. There was about 10 of us that went up, a few from South Alabama, and we spent the latter part of the day just kind of working the halls, private office calls, calling some representatives out of session just to have a word, see where they stood, see if we can, flip them with some last-minute factoids. There was quite a bit of information that was misinformation, and it surprised me of what they were basing their vote on. And, it was a lesson learned, obviously, for us that it wasn't us passing the information. I believe it was, kind of the opposing side.
Mm-hmm.
And, unfortunate as it was, but we were playing a home game and an away field and really the underdog because, the governor's got that untethered access into the House and the Senate. And then one thing I really, which is really an eye-opener for me, of the veterans who are serving as representatives right now, I'm learning that they were quite an influence as to how this thing was shaping. And so if they were fed some misinformation, being veterans, that their fellow colleagues relied on their input and feedback, I'm afraid they voted yes also. And it's a shame, man. It really is.
It's a shame. It's frightening to me that you would think about the people that should know what's going on. They're going to be tasked with this vote. Don't have the real information. Now, for other citizens, we've been getting the word out for a long time, but people don't, take in everything and process. But
your
job is to vote on this. You'd think you would have both sides. I mean, whether they agree or disagree, they would have the real information before they voted. That is not just specific to the story for Alabama veterans, but that is a frightening thing for all kind of legislation passed in the state, because it's probably not only just in this case you have that situation. So up to the minute of the day they're voting, they didn't know the full story, Sergeant Major.
That's exactly correct. Right. And I believe they voted without knowing the full story either. We an ability to have this untethered access allowed the governor's office and the bill sponsors to kind of stack the deck. And there wasn't much bipartisan that I seen. And I wouldn't say that some of the representatives were fully decided. I'm sure we changed some minds once they heard the rest of the story, especially those one-on-one interviews with Admiral Davis. He gave it from the horse's mouth. But I had served as a former board member, and there was another current board member up there as well, and that brought some street cred to the problem set also. Interestingly enough, as they were talking about this bill, and that too went through as fast as this whole thing's been fast-tracked, it didn't have much debate at all. There was one person that stood up in opposition, I believe, and then it went through and it got voted. That was peculiar. That's not, normally how it sort of plays out, especially how contentious and controversial this thing was.
Yeah.
Yeah, this was, for the word go, if everybody remembers, it was the first day of gaveling into session that this bill first showed up in committee.
Right.
That is not normal.
That's pre-planned.
That is moving it forward. I mean, something like this, you would have on down, weeks would pass, there would be discussion and all that. This thing was fast-tracked.
Yeah, it was oiled up and ready to go. And could you give me... Sergeant Major, could you give us an example of where they got, with the vote? Obviously, they didn't vote the will of the veterans, but what was some of that misinformation, or where were the lawmakers confused on issues in your mind?
Well, one, Yeah, great question. And one of them, and I think the most prominent one, is with this sub and, you know, the sort of rewriting and the addition with the amendments that the State Board of Veterans Affairs would be retaining, you know, its original authority and oversight. And that can't be further from the truth. There's four funding streams within the State Board of Veterans Affairs, and pretty much three primary ones are going to be taken away. And then the other one is just, you know, advisory. So this State Board of Veterans Affairs, from where it was to what it's going to be once the governor signs this, is really going to be neutered and strictly an advisory role, and have sort of no command and control over what it's been doing for the past 80 years. That was the most prominent one of the misinformation that was being sort of levied amongst all the representatives.
You know, in talking about the 80 years, it's been this way since the 1940s, and it's been a non-political thing, which I think is a good thing. Of course, times have changed and now has become political, and I want to talk about that going forward with y'all. But before that, the idea that now, okay, well, this is a cabinet position, it elevates it, all the, you know, what's come out of the governor's office. Yep. But that also tells me that on the whim of who the new executive is in any given election cycle, the policies that benefit or hurt our veterans can change with every gubernatorial cycle, that it's connected to the politics that way. I don't believe that's a good thing. Sergeant Major, the veteran in this conversation, do you think that's a good thing?
I don't believe it's a good thing either. I mean, you know, it's kind of said another way, is this commissioner, whoever the governor appoints, is going to obviously have to drink the Kool-Aid and play by the governor's agenda, else, you know, or otherwise.
You don't get the job, right? It's like...
Yeah, you're right. You only get the job.
What the governor said in the State of the State address, yeah. And I paraphrase this many times, but when she said, I need a team player with the governor's office, no, you don't. I want a team player for Sergeant Battaglia and all the other veterans in the state. That's who you should be the team player for,
right?
Not for who wins the election.
So it's one of the reasons why, Sean and Dan, that we have so many huge problems with big VA, big federal VA, because, as you know, it changes every time the president changes
out.
And you have a new VA secretary comes in and wants to change policy and re-guide, redirect, and the turbulence never settles from the previous administration. And so I see it no other way that it's going to happen this way, unless, of course, there's a governor who comes in and stays for a while. But we can't predict that.
Or possibly a governor that comes in and reverses this whole thing. Is that possible, Sean?
That's certainly a possibility. Now, we're not going to be able to right this ship until another governor comes in. And so that, you know, personally, I can't wait till the election.
Let me get Tommy Tuberville on the phone now.
Well, listen, I mean, and that could be a fix. But my problem with it is that it goes that you're going to have to fix and unfix and fix and unfix. That's a wasted time for the veterans in our state. So politically now, this thing that used to not be political with the Alabama Department of Veterans Affairs, I think, has become that way because the governor made it that way. What are y'all doing to organize? I mean, as you look at the way the votes went down, people didn't have information. They were lobbied by the executive branch more than the veterans. Yes. What are y'all doing going forward to change that?
Well, we formed a political action committee, and there may be others, political action committees in other parts of the geography of the state that form as well. And that's going to bring us some funding revenue that we can have lobbyists up there in the building, which, again, we didn't have. So you're playing at a disadvantage here, and we were forced to be more reactive than proactive in a strategy of helping them to help themselves. And I'm meaning the representatives who were not fully informed as to a more holistic picture of where this has come and where it will go if voted yes. And I hate for folks to have to learn the hard way. And so that's the initial strategy right now, is to form that pack and build upon it And we'll wait and see if Admiral Davis winds up on the ballot as a candidate for, you know, one of these offices. I haven't heard the lieutenant governor come out publicly that based on the vote yesterday. I'm sure he will, because, you know, he was opposed to it, too.
He said, well, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Double down on it.
That's right.
Alabama House of Representatives missed this yesterday. They advanced the Governor Kay Ivey-backed legislation, and it just restructures the state board in all kinds of ways that most veterans did not want to see at all after it working fine on its own, especially under the last 6 years under Kent Davis. It appears that veterans were very pleased with him. And there was an interesting comment by, I don't know if you caught this or not, Sean, on Jeff's show a few days ago. Jennifer Fidler, the state rep in Baldwin County, was on, and she talked about the Alabama State Veterans Memorial Cemetery in Spanish Fort. And she talked about it, Sergeant Major, like it was a grassroots thing. I mean, that got done because politics was out of the way, and everyone is so pleased that that facility is here. Can you speak to that? Is that an example of how things were going right as things were?
Yeah, it's a perfect example to show that the exercising of its authority of the State Board of Veterans Affairs. So, veterans obviously incur a privilege to be buried in a veteran cemetery of some sort, and Alabama had none before Spanish Fort. It had some federal cemeteries, but, you know, for instance, down this way in Baldwin and Mobile County, the cemetery that veterans had was completely full. And so you either had to go to Mississippi or the Veterans Cemetery in Pensacola to be buried. The previous commissioner prior to Admiral Davis was Admiral Marsh, and he wasn't a big proponent for a new cemetery. It was the State Board of Veterans Affairs who overruled him, and fast forward, and here we are now. And this cemetery that we have in Spanish Fort is, I don't want to say so popular, but it's so well used.
Yeah.
We just had to commemorate an extension to the land. So it was a very, very needed capability and asset, and because strictly and solely because of the State Board of Veterans Affairs that made that happen. Now, we receive federal grants to that cemetery, as well as state subsidies. So, you know, we play by the rule of the big VA too, and guided by the Federal Burial Administration that runs like Arlington National Cemetery and the ones across the country. And it's a very, beautiful piece of land, and a veteran and family are extremely proud to be laid to rest there at their final resting place.
I'll tell you, I've been there for one or two memorial events there, and it's striking how beautiful that land is. It's right there, above the bluff, I guess, and it just rolled. It's absolutely breathtakingly beautiful. Mm-hmm. And when you're there for one of those services, obviously, you're moved by the fact that you're there for that. So we talked about going to anything else.
As we wrap up here, I mean, we're kind of getting to it here, but you said, people having to find out the hard way. So while there's an organization here, it seems like, in Southwest Alabama with the veterans, I don't know if I'm speaking out of turn, but it seems like other areas of the state aren't as well organized.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that, learning the hard way, that you're going to have an easier time organizing veterans in Northwest Alabama or East Central Alabama, those places?
I think so. Admiral Davis was quoted yesterday as saying, this was really an eye opener. And one positive thing it did do is, I believe, it's going to unify veterans throughout the state. Otherwise, if it was status quo, we'd be somewhat fragmented with regards to organizations. And then the organizations you did have had their own, separate agenda, the American Legion of VFW, the Marine Corps League, and blah, blah, blah. But the unification of those was the State Board of Veterans Affairs. It was those nine veteran service organizations that came together at the table and spoke on behalf of all the veterans throughout the state, members and non-members of those VSOs. And that was the beauty of it. That was the sort of the connecting file. And that's the body that should have been used to sort of critique this bill, to be used by the House and the Senate. We need a holistic opinion as to the validity of this bill and use the State Board of Veterans Affairs. If they did, because they would get a very holistic from all the veterans, all the service branches, unlike what really transpired, and they pulled in the Veterans of Foreign Wars and American Legion behind closed doors. None of the other VSOs with an invitation, and well, there was a third, but since pulled out, the DAV, and so it just contained those three organizations and not the rest of the veteran service organizations. My organization was never invited to the table.
Wow.
You know, it's disgraceful because it's those dirty politics of stacking the deck. So what we have here, fellas, is we have of the, I say nine VSOs, but one of them is going away because the POW MIA, yeah, they don't have the depth anymore. So it's going to be eight, but five of those eight are in opposition. I mean, it doesn't take a math scientist really to see how that plays out. Five are against it, three are for it, and it passed.
Yeah, look what happened.
Yeah, and how those three voted for it, too, there's probably a lot of backroom wrangling there. One last question, and I'm going to ask you to maybe speculate a little bit, if you don't mind, Sergeant Major. Why do you think, do you have any clue that this whole thing has now happened? We saw it unraveling for a good 8-9 months. Why was the governor so adamant on this particular issue?
Well, my personal and professional belief is that it's retaliation for what transpired early on when I was still a member of the board, and how then Commissioner Davis was obligated by law to file an ethics complaint based off of a complaint from the board, from three board members, and he had to file that, or he suffered a Class A misdemeanor or Class B misdemeanor. So when he did that against an agency that fell under Governor Ivey's umbrella, the Alabama Department of Mental Health, and one of her favorite commissioners there, Ken Boswell, she blew an O-ring. And I believe, though, the personal attack from her to Admiral Davis by asking for his resignation took place shortly thereafter. Yeah. The timing is too coincidental not to think that. There's also, some toxic leadership within the State Board of Veterans Affairs concerning the vice chairman of that, Scott Gedlin.
I get that, yeah.
Yeah, and this guy, I think, was in cahoots with the governor's office and tried to play that entire strategy against Admiral Davis to oust him. He's caught red-handed, lying, and really cheating his profession by doing what he did. And we can save that for another interview if needed.
Sure.
But I'm surprised that guy hasn't, been removed or resigned.
Thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it. We're up against a big break. So a lot to consider, a lot to think, and we appreciate it coming from you.
Absolutely.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, fellas. Talk to y'all next time. Pray for all the veterans.
You got it.
Absolutely. Coming right back. More of Mobile Mornings.
Morning from Dan and Sean in for Dalton on FM Talk 106.5. Always enjoyed my, you were in music radio too. You know, we enjoyed our careers in music radio and in entertainment and all that kind of thing. But never had the gravitas of a conversation we just had.
Mm-hmm.
And what a man. What a guy.
The Sergeant Major's special dude.
He's very diplomatic there, too. Wasn't pounding the table.
That's why he was at the heights of giving advisory in advisory capacity at the federal government, the high levels. Mm. So I also got this from our buddy Pete. Said Alabama Veterans PAC is raising funds to support veteran-friendly candidates. So that PAC is out there. It's a shame, but it's the reality of the world. You can sit back and say, well, the veterans shouldn't have to be in a politicized... Okay, I agree with you, but reality is they got shown, you got to lobby. I mean, of course it shouldn't be that way,
but it is. They got shoved into that arena. They're reacting to it. Not even, I give them credit for a lot of things. They kept showing up. That had to apply some pressure for sure. And then they immediately form this pack, or maybe...
I don't think immediately enough. No, I don't. But they have now.
They have now. But I'm saying that they're not just sitting on their hands.
No, and our group down here has not sat on their hands at all. But the problem is it takes more voices, more places. Like I said, you look at the vote breakdown. And
what do you see locally?
We probably had, I don't have it in front of me. We just have a minute left here. But I think if I sit down and do the math, a higher percentage of the nays yesterday in the House vote came from Southwest Alabama. It's also Democrats and Republicans. Nays, if you look at the other areas of the state, we're very different down here. There were some other areas of the state that had nay votes from their representatives, but we had more down here. Well, you got to get, if you start getting that same percentage, not just in Southwest Alabama, but get people organized in East Central and Northwest and Northeast and West Central and other areas of the state. Not that there are some veteran communities that are organized, but I don't think there's any of them organized in the state like we have in Southwest Alabama. And so, yeah, they got to do that. And it's become political. Veterans' issues have become political, believe it or not. And so, yeah, they have a pack out there raising money to run candidates that are pro doing it the way the veterans want to do it.
How about Wanlyn Govan speaking out? So, Democrat from Birmingham, and she said, this thing smells to me. Basically, mm-hmm. She said, this thing smells.
Yeah, well, I mean, you can look at, in our area, we had, if I had a second here, I could probably pull it back up. Let's see, in our breakdown here, get a second here, let's see. Bracey from here, Brown from here. Drummond from here, Easterbrook from here. These are nay votes.
They're all Democrats.
No, not all Democrats. You got Brown and Easterbrook are both Republicans.
Oh, okay.
And I'm trying to look through you've got, and Govan just abstained,
did
abstention.
Okay.
So, yeah, we'll pick this up more. I think Fiddler was a no. So we'll pick this up on the Midday Mobile show coming up later on. By the way, speaking of shows coming up, it's our man Jeff Poor. He's got Todd Stacey in his first hour, Scott Buttram in the second, and Chris Elliott in third.
That's a good lineup. That's his Friday lineup. It's 8:59 FM Talk 106. Thanks for filling in, Sean.
No problem.
Dan and Dalton back with you Monday.